Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello, and welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and we have got, I think, a fun hour today because we're going to be talking about spooks. But these are spooks, well, we know these spooks. They are people that have gotten a lot of recognition. Well, maybe some of them haven't gotten as much as others. But we're going to be going to Hollywood. That's right, The Ghosts of Hollywood, the show still goes on. My guest is Marla Brooks, and she has put together this fun book. Marla, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you for asking me.
Well, it is absolutely a delight. Now, you have your own radio show. You are a woman that has just, well, done so many fun things in your life. Whatever ever possessed you to decide to write about a bunch of Hollywood ghosts?
Aside from the fact that I was born here and raised here and know where they all haunt.
That's just kind of a good reason.
The natural progression of things, and I've always been involved in the supernatural. I've always had paranormal experiences throughout life. I was brought up understanding that my great-grandmother was a witch.
Ooh.
So it all just kind of fell into place, and luckily enough, a friend of mine was doing a book for Schiffer Books, and the people from Schiffer came out to talk to him, and it wasn't a ghost book, it was more like a dearly departed tour kind of book.
Mm-hmm.
And she said, by the way, do you know anybody that could write a book about the Hollywood ghost? And he said, oh yeah. So it kind of fell on my lap, and that's how Ghosts of Hollywood, the first book, began, and it turned into a series of three. Book two is same type of book, but the subtitle is Talking to Spirits, and it's a bunch of seances, not only the ones that we've done, but some friends of mine like Psychic to the Stars, Kenny Kingston, and mm-hmm. Richard Sennett, and Hans Holzer. They all contributed some seance stories to the book. So that's going to be kind of fascinating because Richard Sennett has some great ones, particularly one with Rudolph Valentino.
Oh.
That is very interesting about how he died, and that may not be the way that it was written in the press. So that's really good. And then I'm working, just putting the final touches on book three, which should be out sometime after the first of the year because Hollywood is full of haunted locations.
Well, we have some pretty spooky characters and abnormal personalities sometimes that are in Hollywood. But that's what Hollywood is all about. It's all of that mystique, the magic of the golden screen, as it once was described, and radio, you know, television. There's just been so much that's gone on in that part of the world. And I was born and raised in Los Angeles, so I was very, very familiar.
So you
with,
know, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Exactly.
Oh, yes.
And I think the thing about Hollywood, I mean, people are always asking me if I think that Hollywood is more haunted than anywhere else, and I don't believe that it is, but I do believe that our spirits are a lot more familiar, more famous.
Now let's go into a little bit of the history about how Hollywood came to be, mm-hmm. how the name was chosen, and all that kind of good stuff. I know it started in the 1800s, about 1886.
It did, and Hollywood was a sleepy little farm community at that point, and all that really stood before even the farmers came in was a single adobe hut, because Hollywood, as was California, was also part of Mexico way back then. So it was farmland, and it was just a sleepy little town, until some people from back east decided to, and it was just when the talkies were starting silent movies, and they were looking for a place that had a good climate so they could shoot year-round. So they ventured out west and found this tiny little hamlet, and the natives were friendly, so to speak, and it very slowly became the film capital of the world. There was a man, a Mr. Wilcox, who was a real estate developer in the East, and he came out and started turning it into a town. It had stores, it had all kinds of things, you know, post office mm-hmm. and all that. And very slowly it began to emerge as a little hamlet. There were all kinds of laws running through the town, like you cannot have more than, you know, 300 cattle on the street at one time, because that was against law, but up until 300 you could, you know, go them right down the boulevard, which was, it was not Hollywood Boulevard originally, but it was called Prospect Avenue. And it slowly, with the advent of the movie industry, started to emerge. Mr. Wilcox's wife, I think her name is Daida, it's D-A-I-D-A, she was on a train on her way out here, and somebody mentioned the word Hollywood, and she liked it, so she's the one that was responsible for naming the town.
Well, there is so much about the city, and of course it is far removed from what originally it was.
Mm-hmm.
You go there now and you have crack traffic congestion, and it's just unbelievable. It's wall-to-wall people today.
It is. It's incredibly bad.
Yes.
Even walking is difficult sometimes.
It really is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's like New York.
Yeah.
In many ways.
It is. More spread out, but exactly like that.
Just very much like New York. Well, there are so many interesting persons and conditions and situations that you have in your book. Why don't we start off with the Houdini Mansion, which is right on Laurel Canyon Boulevard. And Laurel Canyon is really quite an interesting place because it's got all these twisting streets and all this kind of stuff. But Houdini, almost everybody's heard Houdini's name because he was someone that was really against psychics. He just had seen so much fraud that the idea of him haunting his own mansion is really, I think, fabulous. I mean, is anybody...
He's holding a grudge, definitely.
Right, I mean, this is just really great. So tell us about the mansion that Houdini lived in.
Well, he didn't live in there very long, but he bought this mansion. He was doing a lot of stuff back east, and he bought the mansion and then decided to move over to Hollywood. And he just decided that he needed another place, you know, some place to hang out. And it was a beautiful, beautiful home. And he was there just for a while before he had his fatal accident where he got punched in the stomach and
mm-hmm.
Died of peritonitis, actually. But after his death, his wife continued to live in the house up until the 1940s. He passed away, you know, several years before that. But her health began to deteriorate. And after she moved away, the house was taken over by a writer by the name of Lee Alden. And she was one that pioneered the women's movement and wrote A Woman's Call to Arms back in the 50s. And people often called her the Green Madonna because whenever the moon was full, she would stand out on one of the mansion's balconies wearing this green negligee and a long green scarf and not much else. And she would just allow the wind to blow through her hair and clothing. And for one day, all of a sudden, she just simply abandoned the house. Now, we don't know if that was because Houdini was back telling her to put some clothes on or what, but she left. And in the late 1950s, a brush fire swept through Laurel Canyon, which happens quite a bit, as you probably know.
Mm-hmm.
And it destroyed a number of houses in the area, including that house. And all that remained after the fire was, you know, a couple of walls, the chauffeur's quarters, and part of the garage. And over time, it's deteriorated to practically nothing. But they say Houdini's ghost still walks the grounds. People have seen him. Many people pay a vigil there on Halloween, although you can't really get in. You can peek through a gate or something.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But many people claim to see a dark figure standing on a non-existent staircase or walking in the grotto now. So, you know, it's kind of nice to think that he had a place that he really felt comfortable, even though he didn't get to live there very long, and comes back because, you know, lots of spirits come back to places that have happy memories attached to them. Mm-hmm. And it may very well be that that's the case with Houdini.
Well, and again, there's all kinds of characters in here. We've got Errol Flynn, we've got Inger Stevens, we've got all kinds of people we're going to be talking about, but let's go to one of the most well-known mobsters, Bugsy. Bugsy Siegel. This was a man that was just, I don't know what we'd want to say about him, but he was a unique personality. Shall we say that?
Hey, that's PC, yes.
Unique. That's what he was. Now, he was in Beverly Hills, and Beverly Hills was incorporated in 1914, and it's a gorgeous area, and Mary Pickford had a lot to do with the development of the exclusivity of Beverly Hills.
Yes, she
did. But how did Bugsy get in there?
His girlfriend had a home there, and, you know, he was a mobster, and he had a bad reputation, but by the same token, a lot of people loved Bugsy Siegel, who, by the way, hated that nickname. And he got that because he used to get angry quite a bit, and he had a very short fuse. And one of his cohorts, whenever he did, would accuse him of bugging out. And so every time he started bugging out, they would call him Bugsy. And I think that might be part of the reason he's still haunting all over the place, because he just hates that name, and it's never going to leave him.
Mm-hmm.
Never going to leave him. But he actually passed away in Beverly Hills at his girlfriend's house. Lots of the houses there, even though this isn't like the high-end district of Beverly Hills, not the, you know, $8,000 million homes.
Mm-hmm.
It's more in the flats, but, you know, they're beautiful houses, and lots of them have huge picture windows in the front. And he was sitting on the couch reading the paper when a rival gang, for lack of a better term, kind of staked him out and just shot him right through the window several times. It wasn't pretty when they found the body, but they know it was a gangland hitting, hit. And so it seems that Mr. Siegel, I don't want to be disrespectful now, he's not haunting the house now per se. It's not an active haunting, but psychics have been in the house, and it's residual energy of his final moments.
Mm-hmm.
And they see his apparition kind of cowering in fear as the bullets start flying. And it's a movie that plays over and over again.
Let's stop this, Ed, because you've brought up a very good point.
Mm-hmm.
Many times there will be those individuals who are very sensitive to environments they walk into, will use the term psychic, but they maybe wouldn't even classify themselves as a psychic.
No more a sensitive, sometimes they say.
Right, and they have this experience where it's like someone has turned on a hologram, and they are actually seeing it, just like what you've described with Bugsy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's going over and over and over again. It's as if there is this energy imprint that is there for those that are capable of seeing. It doesn't mean that he's there, but this imprint is there. And that's quite a bit different from actually seeing an apparition that communicates with you, that has a conversation with you, and from some who just seem to be stuck for whatever reason. I mean, there's all these variables that you can experience.
Very true.
What's been your most dramatic experience with that?
I don't see spirits necessarily, but I certainly feel them around. And I had an experience several years ago. I mean, all my life I've had things like when I was a little kid, my bed used to shake every morning and wake me up. And I know this is California and we have earthquakes, but not every morning at the same time. So there's always been things that I've seen and heard, but I had not been touched by spirit up until this one day. I was going through a difficult time, and my friend Kenny Kingston suggested I do meditation every day. He's very big on that, and I think it's a very healthy thing to do. And I did it for a few days and then kind of slacked off a little bit. And he called a couple days later and he said, "Oh, are you still meditating?" And I went, "Yeah," you know, just out of defense, I guess. And he said, "No, you're not. Don't lie to your psychic." And I went, "Oops," you know, busted. So that night I decided I'd better get back to it. And I was living alone at the time. And it was about midnight. I didn't bother to turn on any lights. Went into my office, lit a candle. And as soon as I started the meditation, I felt a very firm grip on my shoulder, kind of like a reassuring squeeze.
Mm-hmm.
Like, okay, you're doing it. Good. We recognize that. Thank you very much. And, you know, ordinarily, if something had touched me, you know, unseen hands and all that, I probably would have been out the door or at least, you know, shivering in my boots. But this was so comforting and so reassuring. I just kept meditating. It was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I think that was kind of the most eye-opening experience I've had. I mean, I've been touched, by, you know, since then and hear voices. I kind of get messages from spirit on occasion, and usually when I'm just about to fall asleep, you know, they want to get me when I'm at my weakest, I suppose. And I've had a couple. They're always when it's very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
One brief one was I heard a voice say they're trying to kill Judy. And Judy was one of my best friend's moms, and at the time she was in the hospital. So I called, you know, my friend the next day, and I said, I'm not sure what this means. I know she's supposed to be in good hands, but, you know, maybe you ought to check into it or pass it along or something. And come to find out, she was on three different antidepressant medications.
Oh,
they were
no.
really overdosing her big time.
Mm-mm.
And by the time I got the message and passed it on and we found out, it was really too late, and I think that really contributed to her passing because she died shortly thereafter.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, those are the kinds of messages I get, and it's like, you know, I'd be happy to have a hi, how are you, rather than these other things, but I also realize it's important for spirit to get their point across.
Let's talk about two old-timers, and I just think they're fabulous people. I love them as individuals. Their personal stories are just so wonderful, but they were incredible actors in their time.
Mm-hmm.
And that is actor Lou Chaney, Bela Lugosi, you know, Dracula,
oh, yeah.
the real bad guy. And Lou Chaney was awesome. I mean, the man of a thousand faces. This guy worked with materials that nobody today would even touch. In fact, he even ended up with scars because
mm-hmm.
of the different materials that he would use to create the illusion, the face, the form, whatever it was that he needed,
mm-hmm.
like in The Hunchback of Notre Dame. But there is Hollywood and Vine, this intersection, and they show up there. That
mm-hmm.
was really fun for me to read.
They do. Chaney probably doesn't too much anymore. He was very attached to a bus bench at the corner of Hollywood and Vine. And people would often see his apparition sitting at that bus bench. It seems though when they removed the bus bench, he got mad and doesn't come back. But Bela Lugosi used to take a daily constitutional. In his later years, he lived not far from the boulevard. So every day he would walk down to the boulevard past Hollywood and Vine and just take his little daily constitutional. Well, when he passed away, there was a mortuary. It's not there anymore, but where all the stars seemed to end up, just a few blocks from Hollywood and Vine. And he ended up there for his funeral. And when they were getting ready to take his body to the cemetery, they loaded it up in the hearse. And the Chamber of Commerce at that time told the driver, don't drive down Hollywood Boulevard. It's bad for business. So he fully intended to go the long way around. He pulled out of the driveway. He started down where he could make the turn onto another street, and he claims that somebody took the wheel of the hearse, and he had no choice but to go right past Hollywood and Vine and down Hollywood Boulevard. So I think Bela Lugosi got the last word on that one.
Don't you just love it?
I do.
I think this is fabulous.
I do.
He said, excuse me. I'm having it done my way.
That's it. I can do that now.
Oh, I just think that is so wonderful. And Mama Cass Elliot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you didn't have a lot about her.
No.
And she was so involved with drugs, and, you know, she had become so popular. And
she did.
Then her young life was snuffed out because of overdose. But tell us about Mama Cass.
Well, Dan Aykroyd moved into the house where Mama Cass Elliot lived. And Dan Aykroyd, you guys know him from Ghostbusters and many other things. He does believe very strongly in the supernatural, the paranormal. And he said that he felt her in the house quite a bit. And he was sure it was her because the apparition tried to climb into bed with him one night. And it was a very big one, you know, in size. So he just naturally assumed it was her And I guess they lived side by side for quite a while. And the other thing, too, that people think that she choked on a ham sandwich or something, and that actually wasn't the case. That's the urban legend, that the way she died.
Mm-hmm.
But she had a heart attack and probably, as you said, result of drugs.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, so she shared Dan Aykroyd's home for many years.
Now, part of your writing involves some psychic researchers.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us who they were and why they became a part of what you did.
Well, there have been so many books out on hauntings, and they're all stories told. You know, I decided I wanted to write the type of book that I enjoy reading with kind of hands-on information. And I decided to get a team together. You know, we were going to be ghost hunters, or like most haunted. And, you know, in this day and age, people are investigating both scientifically and with mediums. And there are some groups that are exclusive to one or the other, and I think it's good to have a combination of both. So I got in contact with a man named Barry Conrad. He's a videographer, but he is also a ghost investigator, paranormal investigator. He investigated the very famous San Pedro haunting back in 1989 here, which is one of the most grisly ones that I've heard of. One of their team members actually got hung by a spirit in the attic and almost passed away. So I just called Barry and introduced myself and told him I was doing this book and I was looking to get a team together. And he said that he knew of a very good psychic by the name of Victoria Gross. And I thought, this is great, you know. And then we got together with a friend of mine, Scott Michaels, who is a Hollywood historian. He also does the Dearly Departed tours in Hollywood and has a very interesting website called findadeath.com. And so we just kind of went out on a couple of investigations, and everybody had their own talent. You know, Victoria could feel spirits and tell us where to go. Scott had the history of the locations, which is great. Barry had the camera in hand, and I, you know, kind of filled in all the different areas. And it turned out that we're just a really, really good team together and have done many, many, many investigations since the very beginning. And I just really feel blessed to have them on my side, because they're just all great people.
You go into restaurants. There's so much down in Hollywood.
There is.
You've just got a plethora of opportunity down there. The Magic Castle has been known by magicians for I don't know how many years. My goodness, when did it first start becoming the place for magicians?
Well, it started out as a private residence back in the 20s, and then dates are flying out of my head, but it was probably around 1960 that a man named Milt Larson, who was a television producer, bought the property and decided to turn it into a private club for magicians and open to the public by invitation only or by knowing a member or something. But the house is made up. I mean, he remodeled it completely, and he got bits and pieces from houses all over the world and in the city, lamplights from downtown L.A., you know, a fountain from Italy, that kind of thing. I mean, it's put together with so many bits and pieces of other places, and as you know, things hold energy as well. So between the old residents that used to live there and bringing in bits and pieces of energy from other places, one would have to assume that it was probably haunted. There have been a couple of people that have done investigations on the sly, but the Magic Castle is not too crazy about talking too much about their ghosts. There was a magician that apparently died several years ago, and he haunts one of the showrooms. But they have found quite a few haunting places in there, aside from the ones that, of course, they manufacture. They're like, they have a piano-playing ghost named Irma, who sits down in Irma's room and plays piano and does requests and everything, except she's not up to the new stuff, so you have to ask her old songs. And, of course, they put a drink next to her, and the drink disappears during the night. But interestingly enough, although that is fiction, the daughter of the original owner, I believe her name was Irma, and that's why they used it, obviously, she was into music, and as the story goes, her family did not care too much about her piano playing. So they put her and her piano up in the attic or in one of the turrets, because turrets, it's a very interesting-looking building. And Irma used to go up there and practice her music. So even though this is a manufactured story, it's quite possible that Irma is still hanging around the piano. Maybe she does a few things when people aren't around. But it's, you know, there are ghost stories, lots of them are based on fiction anyway, even, you know, I mean, on fact anyway.
Mm-hmm. A lot of it is.
Yeah.
And sometimes it's so fascinating when people will have particular experiences in different places, good, bad, or indifferent.
Mm-hmm.
They are those experiences, and once you have one, you never, ever forget it.
Mm-mm.
As long as you live, because it's like it's got this hardwire imprint on your emotional psyche, and however it was experienced, whether you actually see something, or you feel it, or you hear it, or you get all three combined,
mm-hmm.
you know this is your experience. Well, I know that the Wax Museum has a sign outside that says, "This place is haunted, be prepared." You have, and that's not a surprise, you have a photo in here of the Last Supper exhibit, and there's an orb above one of the wax figures.
Mm-hmm.
And you said there's 2 to 3 million people a year that visit this facility. What did you guys find there that was so significant?
Things that they didn't even realize were there. I mean, we had talked to the general manager and gotten a few interesting stories that came up along the way. He said people, tourists come from all over the world to the Wax Museum, and very often when they get back home and look at their pictures, they find anomalies, whether it be orbs or light rods or mists or something. And one woman from England sent a picture just full of orbs and thought something was wrong with her camera. It was not digital. It was 35 millimeter. Took the camera and the film into a professional who said, "I don't know what this is. You know, this is not any fault of the camera or the film." But we immediately, when we got in there, and mind you, it is a little creepy walking into a wax museum at midnight with all the lights turned off. You know, it's almost like those wax figures' eyes following you around, and that's great imagination, but it's still creepy. It's like being afraid of clowns kind of thing. But Victoria, our psychic, immediately felt the presence of a male that had, and she was like complaining of a headache right in the back of her head. And she said, "Somebody just got conked right here on the spot." She says, "It not during wax museum times, but before that." She says, "Somebody is injured." And she was so dizzy, she had to sit down. And we just kind of, she thought, after she got her composure back, she said, "I've got to keep walking." And she walked right past the Spider-Man exhibit and all of a sudden started walking in circles. And I said, "Are you okay?" And she goes, "I'm lost. I'm lost. I need to get out of here. I'm lost." And I said, "Well, who are you?" And she goes, "My name is Sarah, and I was murdered not far from here, and I don't know how to leave." And we don't make it a practice to cross spirits over, because lots of times they're here in visitation. They've crossed over. They're just coming back for mm-hmm.
whatever reason.
But she really wanted to cross. She was desperately asking for help. So Victoria called what she called the psychic police to come get her, and she also called for somebody that this Sarah would recognize. And an elderly spirit stepped in, a woman that Sarah immediately did recognize, and went straight through to her.
Mm-hmm.
And we were able to cross her over. The other thing interesting that Victoria found at the Wax Museum was that she said that not all the wax figures are wax, in the sense that there are what she calls hitchhiking ghosts that have entered a couple of the figures here and there. And she explained that by saying some spirits are so desperate to get back in human form, they will settle,
mm-hmm.
even for a wax figure. And she said the Jude Law one particularly was, she was sure that one was inhabited. And if you look at that compared to some of the others, and even trying not to be biased by what she said, there does seem to be some humanity in that wax figure. I know it sounds crazy, but it made sense when I saw it and kind of had to back away. I thought, ooh, she's right.
Pretty cool. I'll tell you, this is a fun book to read, and it's one you want to keep for reading on Halloween. You know, if you really want to spook somebody really good, you got some good stories in here, but some wonderful information that goes along with it. A lot of the specially noted locations, restaurants, homes, it's just absolutely wonderful. Now, Marla, you have a website, hauntedwriter.com. Very appropriate. Hauntedwriter.com. She's coming out with book number 2, and she's finishing up book number 3. So if you can get Ghosts of Hollywood, the show still goes on. Marla, it's been a delight having you as a guest. Thank you for being with me today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me. I appreciate it very much.
This is Donna Sebo. We're taking a break. Don't go away. Ghosts don't scare us. We're going to be right back.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Do you deal with diabetes, high blood pressure, osteoporosis, or chronic pain? Do you want to know one of Dr. Perricone's 7 secrets to beauty, health, and longevity? Do you have 15 minutes a day to look and feel better? Then let me introduce you to TTAP, the workout that works. For the beginner or expert exerciser, learn from physical training specialist Teresa Tapp how, in just 15 minutes a day, you can burn fat and sugar, build strong bones and muscles, and lose inches fast with no equipment or jumping. Visit the TTAP website, TTAP.com, or call 1-800-342-0717 to learn how. That's TTAPP.com. We'll help you lose inches, look good, and feel fabulous at TTAP. 1-800-342-0717. TTAP.com.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo, and telephone lines are now open, and I guarantee you it will not be a ghostly experience. It'll be fun. Give me a buzz if you'd like for me to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 877-876-5227. That's 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. That's 888-815-9756. We also have a direct line of 530-876-3222. That's 530-876-3222. Now, if you're a first-time listener, all I need from you is your first name or your initial. And, of course, I love to know where you're calling from in the country or in the world. So after I get that from you, then I'll give you information, and after that, you can ask me about anything that you like. Remember, there's no such thing as a stupid question. Let's go to our first caller. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
My first name is Elaine, initial A. I'm calling from New Jersey.
Where in New Jersey, Elaine?
Wayne, New Jersey.
Oh, Wayne, New Jersey. Okay. All right. Now, Elaine, the first thing that is coming into my mind are two words, hard work. Well, you're so familiar with those two words that been pretty much the story of your life on so many levels. Nothing's really come easily to you. However, you are ready to really let go of the past you are ready to move on into a whole new lifestyle. You are little by little clipping the strings of attachment to various situations, conditions, habit patterns, etc. Little by little, you're clipping away from them so that you will have a sense of freedom. And I think it's going to take you about a full year and a half to go through what I will describe as a transformation. Now, when I'm watching you, I'm really intrigued with the fact that sometimes you are battling old self-evaluations, old issues of self-esteem. And what I'd like for you to do is not battle it. Observe it when it comes into your mind and just sort of detach and say, this is the way I thought before. I'm getting a replay and I'm rerunning old tapes. And you can turn them off. But when you're vulnerable is when you're very tired. And sometimes you really push yourself physically to the max. So I want to encourage you to be thoughtful about your own physical well-being, number one. And number two, don't be afraid of the past. The past has gotten you to where you are today so that you can have the understanding that you have. You want to utilize it. And what you don't need, what you don't value, you're going to be able to discard. So again, you're clipping those old connections, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and physically. And it's good they're being clipped slowly, but they're being clipped consistently. So your life is going through a transformation, and I would say by the first part of 2010, you're going to have a lot going on in your life. There's a lot of positive things occurring for you. What's on your mind? What did you want to ask me today?
I'd like to know if you can connect me to my mother who passed on.
No, I'm not. Well, let me say this to you. Your mother I am aware of, and it's as if there's a picture in my mind, and she's doing a lot of studying. There is something that she's really interested in that she wasn't able to research and develop while she was here. So I think that your mother is very actively involved in expanding herself and expanding her capabilities. When you asked me if I can connect you with her, my answer would have to be, I'm not able to do that.
Aren't you like our medium? Are you a medium?
Yes, but that doesn't mean that I'm able to connect people all the time. Remember, Dale, when someone passes over, when someone passes on, they may or may not want to maintain connections. So it's okay to let them go because you're here in this experience and it's getting on with your own life and living your own life to the degree and level of personal capacity that you can.
Since we were so close, I would like to, you know, maintain, keep the connection, keep in touch with her.
I don't know that that is really what she would want. That may be your desire, but I don't know that that is her desire. I think your mother has, in her own life, she wasn't able to expand and develop herself as she would have liked to. If she were in our world today as a young woman, she would be very much of an independent mindset because that was her own nature. However, I think at this time, she's doing what she can.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would just say to you, whenever you think of her and you think of her lovingly and just know that she's about doing what she needs to do for herself. Don't try to possess her and don't try to maintain what was in the past. It's not going to be the same way. It's not going to happen.
Well, I've read about, there's a book I read, Hello from Heaven, where, and also on Bill Guggenheim's website. Are you familiar with Bill Guggenheim?
No, not a great deal.
He's got a project, After Death Communication, and there's a story in there about
Well, I just think that there's a time and place for everything, and I'm just seeing your mother very contented, very happy.
I'm happy to hear that.
Yeah, very happy. and expanding. So I would encourage you, if nothing else, to follow her example and to expand your own life. Don't try to live in the past, but you're doing little by little. You are clipping things away, and you are making sure that you're doing this in a way that's comfortable for you, and that's the best any of us can do.
Okay, now Michael Landon, I read that he guides his daughter from beyond the grave, and that he had a special relationship with his daughter, and she said he still guides her and he talks to her. So since I was so close with my mother, I believe that she can guide me from beyond the grave.
But not everybody wants to do that, dear. Not everybody is going to want to do that. At this time, your mother is spending time for herself. She's investing in herself, and I think that that's good.
I'm happy for her, but she's very happy.
Oh, yes.
Can you tell me what she's doing on the other side?
No, and I'm not getting any more information than that.
Okay.
I want to thank you for your call, though.
Okay, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Bye-bye.
Okay. Bye-bye.
This is Donna Sebo. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 877-876-5227. Canadians, 888-815-9756. Or 530-876-3222. You know, there's so many different experiences that people can have. And we may read about someone, on just like our last caller did, and we may say, gee whiz, I wish I could have that happen to me. And it brings to mind an experience that someone shared with me many years ago when I had started into the study of mind and finding out about communication with those that had gone on. And I'll share that with you in just a moment. Let's go to our next caller. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling from?
Hi, this is Sheila from Katy, Texas. Donna, how are you?
Hi, dear. I'm sorry. I couldn't hear your name. Your voice just sort of cut out.
Sheila.
Hi, Sheila. Well, I'm so glad. Well, are you not near all of that storm activity?
We're getting some wind and a whole lot of rain, but no, we're not near Brownsville. Thank God.
Oh, boy, that's a doozy. Good old Polly is having a good time.
Hello, Dolly.
Yeah, yes. Or Dolly. I'm sorry. I said Polly. It's hello, Dolly. Absolutely. Okay, Sheila, let's get down to business with you. The first thing that I'm perceiving is a book. And I'm looking at this book being opened. You're using it as a research aspect. You are saying, I've got to take this detail and this information down. You're writing in a notebook. And then I'm seeing you looking at this book, and it's quite thick. It's not huge. It's a very thick book, and I'd say it's maybe like a little bit bigger than a 5x7. The print in it is really small, so it might be, maybe about a 6x7, but anyway, not real big, but very thick. And I'm looking at you, and I'm seeing you wanting to have specific information that is going to serve purposes for a presentation of some kind that you're going to give. Now, you are a natural-born communicator teacher, and you are finding that you're enjoying this more and more. As you mature, you just love doing what I would call, again, a presentation to others, sharing with them what you know, what you understand, what you found out about, because it just invigorates you. You love to learn, and I think this is a marvelous part of you. This is going to cause you to make a major career change, and I think it's within the cycle of two. I don't know if it's 2 years, if it's February of a year. I'm just not quite sure. I know it's not 2 weeks, but I do know the number two is significant with the time frame. And as I am watching you going through this evolution of development and curiosity and demonstration of what you discover and what you know, you're going to find that the position of being a teacher is going to become stronger and stronger and stronger, and you're going to link up with some individuals that have the same feeling and passion for teaching that you do. Now, Sheila, we've got to go on a break. Will you stay on the phone line?
Absolutely.
All right. We're going to come back in just a minute talking with Sheila and Katy, Texas, and we'll be ready to take your calls, too, after that. But in the meantime, we're going to just take a short break.
curiosity, the demonstration of what the female would like to know, you're going to find that the position of being a teacher is going to be stronger, stronger, stronger. You're going to wake up with some individuals that have same feeling and passion for teaching. Now, Cheryl, we've got to go on a break. Would you stay on the phone line?
Absolutely.
All right, we're going to...
Do you have a group, organization, or club that would like to have an interesting and dynamic speaker? Then you're going to want to have Donna speak to your group. She motivates audiences towards personal empowerment, giving them tools for their personal and professional success. If you would like Donna Sebo to bring a presentation to your next event, call Delphi International at 253-582-5604. That's 253-582-5604.
If you're searching for the perfect gift for a child, consider God's Kiss by Donna Sebo. That's right, Donna is not only a mental practitioner and psychic, she's an author as well. God's Kiss beckons all children and the young at heart to enter the dream world of a little traveler named Johnny. You can order your book today by sending a check or money order to Mrs. Sebo's Classics, Post Office Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497. That's Post Office Box 97272. Tacoma, Washington, 98497. If you'd like both the book and cassette, you pay $19.95 plus applicable tax and shipping charges. This is the book for your favorite child of any age. Donna Sebo's God's Kiss is about a child's sense of place in the world, and it's destined to be a children's classic. Order now. Call 800-872-8852. God's Kiss is written by Donna Sebo and illustrated by Ed Ged Rose. Buy it today. 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna Sebo. Before I go back to Sheila, I want to give out our number here again. 877-876-5227. Canadians 888-815-9756 and 530-876-3222. Sheila, what's your question for me today?
Well, I'll tell you, about 15 or 20 years ago, I actually spoke with you when you were on KFQD Anchorage, Alaska with Herb Shangling.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. Are you for real?
Not to reveal anybody's age, but absolutely. And in fact, I actually had a personal reading with you then about a month and a half to follow up on that. And you were a tremendous help to me, and I experienced several life-changing events that have led me to where I'm at now. Thank you very much. And and now I found myself, you know, 20, 25 something years later, I'm at a loss, spiritually, professionally, personally. I am in transition with work, being laid off, and for the last 5 months, it's interesting that you talk about teaching and loving to learn and the book and the description that you really detailed, because that is so true. But I'm all over the map. So, you know, professionally, I'm getting from you that I really should highly consider something with teaching, and that would be extremely fulfilling to me.
Well, now, what have you been doing, Sheila?
You know what? I have been just having a big party, and by that I mean I've been traveling a lot with my sister. I went to Anchorage several times to see my son. I've just been loving life, taking care of my home, enjoying my husband, and just having, you know, from working from the time I was 16, and now I'm 40-something, I really just had a big sigh of relief, and I didn't feel any pressure because I was, and I am currently, you know, I'm still getting paid for my company because I'm on severance. So I didn't feel the pressure of having to go and find work immediately because the lights are going to be shut off. But now I have a tremendous amount of guilt now because for the last 5 months, I've really just kind of been, you know, kind of just blowing and going and doing whatever Sheila wanted to do with the blessing of my husband to say, go do, be free, fly, have a great time. You've got the time and the money to do it now.
Well, I agree with your husband. I think that was a very intelligent response on his part. Not only that, but I think you needed to have this. You needed a break because what is occurring with you
is a slow version of what I would call a mental whiplash. And when that hits us, it causes us to start evaluating how we value ourselves, what we have put our value of life into, and then all of a sudden you get the whiplash effect of, oh my goodness, there's a need for me to be responsible. How am I going to do this? Where am I going to go? I really think that it was very healthy for you to take the break that you did. And I think what's happening now is all kinds of old stuff is coming in, old habits of concern and fears, and that's all right. That's healthy. That's not unusual. And someone listening to this may say, you're nuts, Donna, but I really mean that. Don't be afraid of the emotions that are putting you through these roller coaster effects every once in a while. You're going to find that as you go through them and as you experience them, if you can just, again, detach a little bit and say, wait a minute, where is this coming from? And you'll be able to make your links. You'll see how something that happened maybe after you had your kids and you went through a real rough time and, oh boy, all of this and all of those old tapes are going to come in. Your life is not what it was. So you have this marvelous opportunity right now to invest in yourself. And if that means going back to school, if that means studying, exploring, do it. This is your opportunity to ask yourself what means the most to you. And again, I think you have been blessed with the gift of gab. You absolutely love being in front of people and doing presentations. So you may find yourself involved, which I know you will, with a particular training group or something like that that is going to absolutely make it joyful to get up every day because of what you're going to be able to share with other people.
Well, you have said something there. Yet my only issue is I'm a starter, I'm not a finisher, and that stops me. I have very limited confidence. And that's where I find myself going, geez, you know, I love being a radio personality and I love giving presentations and I love doing this and I want to do, and then I'm like, oh, wait, Sheila, really, you're not really good enough to do that kind of stuff. So you need to take a different position.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want you to have a bit more faith in yourself. I want you to realize.
You're priceless. Thank you so much.
You are very welcome, hon. And you can go to my website, and if you want to get in touch with me, you always can do that.
I'm glad I found you today, and I have no reason. I actually was coming in. I came into my home office, and I just started your name. I just did a Google search. I was like, oh my gosh, you know, she helped me out so many years ago, and I'm at a loss right now. I'm all over the map, and it's just a hodgepodge of things I want to do when I grow up. And I typed in your name, and there it was, and I was like, oh my gosh, it's, you know, I got 2 hours, and so I've been listening to the BBS station. Never heard of the station before.
Well, how wonderful. I hope you've enjoyed the show.
Meant to be. I love it so much. Thank you so much.
You're welcome, dear. Take care.
My goodness,
we are almost out of time. This has been so much fun. Spooks, having someone call me that talked to me 25 years ago. Well, time marches on. Yes, it does. But it's absolutely delightful. Thank you so much for being a part of the show. And thank you for being part of my listening audience. And tell your friends, because here at BBS, I just absolutely enjoy sharing the wonderful guests that I have with you and also being able to share my skills. There, you know, that pizza recipe I've been promising you, I guarantee you, one way or the other, we're going to get it out. And don't forget, tomorrow we're going to be talking with a pilot. Yes, Bob Klein. Fasten your seatbelts because we're going to be talking about a pilot's memoirs. And, oh, are they something else? Amazing. So he's going to be my guest tomorrow, and then Friday is an open mic. That's right. It'll be a full hour, wide open. You can call me anytime during the hour. Donna Sebo here. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. It is so important for you to realize that you are so much more than what you have even experienced to this point in your life. There are so many wonderful adventures awaiting you,
and so many parts of your talents that you have never yet explored. Look, be adventurous, and let your curiosity soar. It's a great day to be alive. Donna Sebo here. Be back here at the same time, same place, right here on bbsradio.com. Bye-bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.